You. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and as you know, one of our favorite destinations is the Woodstock Opera House, and we've told you about some upcoming events, maybe the comedy festival we had out there and other performers, but this time I'm so excited to tell you about Jimmy Webb. You know him, you've heard his songs, Wichita Lineman, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Galveston, The Moon's a Harsh Mistress. Others, I could go on and on, but you know them, and you know Jimmy Webb, and we're thrilled to have him on the line with us. Hi, Jimmy. Great to talk to you tonight.
Hi, Patty. It's my pleasure to, you know, to join you, and I appreciate you giving me a little bump here. I'm looking forward to the Woodstock Opera House. I've been there before, and it's one of the prettiest little theaters around.
It really is.
So I'm excited. You know, I think of Chicago as one of my homes away from home.
I love that you feel that way about our city. Now, I read a little bit about you. Now, you're coming in this weekend. The performance is Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. at the Woodstock Opera House. And I like to do research as much as I can to make sure that I have the full picture. But I think that your full picture just goes across so many generations of music lovers and the kind of writing that you do. I was struck by the story when Glenn Campbell passed away. Of course, you've written so many songs and collaborated with him throughout both of your careers. But the story about your father making you go to work plowing the fields because you were distracted and dreaming about girls and music, I was really blown away by that story about how you'd heard Glenn Campbell singing Turn Around and Look at Me. Is that the name of the song that you were listening to? Or
yes,
the album?
Ma'am.
Yes.
That's the truth. I was about 14 years old, and I was driving a harrow, which is a big plow. I was turning wheat over. I used to really do, you know, agricultural stuff, you know, like cowboy stuff, you know.
Sure.
And so, I mean, for me to be dreaming, you know, of Glenn Campbell out in the panhandle of Oklahoma, you know, in 1961, 1962. I mean, this was something that was a long way from actually happening to me. But
only it did. I mean, it's one thing to dream.
Only it did. Yeah, it's such a bizarre thing, really.
And that collaboration, I was reading a little bit about, you know, here you have this somewhat conservative, you know, clean cut cowboy and this long haired, you know, less than conservative songwriter. And what was that relationship like?
The first thing he ever said to me, Patty, was he gave me a long look. This is the first time we actually physically met, and it was in the studio. And we'd already had a hit record. In fact, he had won a Grammy Award for Best Male Vocalist in 1967, and we'd had a photo taken together, but never had a conversation or really shook hands. It was for By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
We hadn't really made friends or anything like that, and I had just come back from the Monterey Pop Festival, and I was all decked out in my hippie gear. You know, I had my yak vest on and my Indian moccasins and my red bandana, and you know, I probably hadn't had a bath in a couple of days, you know. And I walked into the studio and walked up to him and said, "Mr. Campbell, I'm Jimmy Webb."
Moccasins and a red bandana, and you introduce yourself.
Well, yeah. I mean, I look like a refugee from Big Brother and the holding company, and he was very, always very, you know, tight faded jeans, Italian stitched Italian leather boots, you know, a checkered shirt, tailored checkered shirt. Quaffed, you know, every hair in place.
Sure.
And he looked up and he kind of raked me with his laser like blue stare, and he shook his head like, "No, you can't be Jimmy Webb. That's impossible." And I said, "Mr. Campbell," I said, I'm Jimmy Webb. I wrote By the Time I Get to Phoenix." And he looked at me again, somewhat doubtful, and he said, "When you gonna get a haircut?"
Oh, man.
So, and, you know, that was the beginning of the friendship.
Aww.
You know, I mean, it's kind of, honestly, it's very funny because we went on to share so much in our lives. I mean, our children grew up together. We played so many concerts together. We had numerous hit records together and just so many musical, you know, we played the Albert Hall with the London Symphony Orchestra. I mean, and we were always a little bit on opposite sides of the fence politically.
Mm-hmm.
What a surprise. The United States of America?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's just totally amazing, right?
Well, and the thing is, it's aspirational, right? We should be able to agree to disagree and still collaborate and make great music together.
I think that our relationship and the 50-year friendship that ensued, and the fact that our children are still great friends and play music together, I think that it is a kind of an example of how you can work together to make good things happen and still, you know, differ in significant ways. My impression of America today is that, you know, if you're not my friend, you're my enemy, you know?
Yeah, it's a shame.
It's so black and white that, and you don't get anything done that way.
I agree. Well, it said it's more about contempt rather than disagreeing, you know.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I think that Americans have always had this contention, and with every wave of immigrants, you had a backlash. My wife is her grandparents were Sicilian, and when the Italians came over, she tells me stories about how, you know, they were sort of forced into neighborhoods and cut off from the best jobs, and they were called names, and I think that every group of people who comes into this country kind of faces a rite of passage, a little bit of hazing, but it's all been for the good. Every time we've embraced a different group of people here and brought them into the fold and made them our friends, we've come out much the better for it.
Well, and that's something I was kind of discovering in your songwriting, was this sort of wanting to blend elements that you can hear each thing almost independently and hear how it all works together beautifully. As many people that listen to the show know, I have a segment called Patty's Appalling Lack of Musical Knowledge. But
that's great.
Thank you. I have to say,
I'm sure that's not true, but
it
that's
is.
Very funny.
It's quite appalling. It's mostly that I can't necessarily name the band or the name of the song. And but what I do when I listen to it, I love music, right? I love things that speak to me. And what I learned listening over the last couple of days to your music is there's so many songwriters who want to tell a story. But in your music and the way it is composed, because I can hear the different elements coming in, whether it's horns or a banjo.
Thank you.
The
I appreciate
strings.
That. I appreciate your attention.
Oh, no, it was really masterful. And again, I went back to Turn Around, Look at Me, and I thought that was, you know, part of the song that made you drive off the row that you were plowing and into the flower bed. you know, it plays out in every single song that you have and how deliberate you are with the words and with the composition. I think that what I hear in your music is this desire to be heard, you know, not just to tell a
yes.
story. That's what I'm hearing in your music.
Well, I embrace a wide variety of musical tastes. I love jazz. I can't say I don't love country music. I grew up with Hank Williams. Ernest Tubb was my father's favorite singer, and I have some my most prized award of all the, you know, little glittering things that I've accumulated down through the years, and I guess I've gotten more than my share, really. But the thing that I value the most is a little is a little statuette. It's a hand holding a goose quill pen, old fashioned sort of pen writing instrument, and it says that I'm a member of the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame, because songwriting is such a touchstone in Nashville and so important and so well respected, that I've got some Grammys and stuff, which has been, I mean, it's really been nice. But the one I treasure is the one that was given to me by other songwriters.
Well, I think that's such a, I think anybody who pursues the arts, more so than perhaps any other profession, that is so incredibly important to us is, for comics, it's knowing that, we call it playing the back of the room, which are the other comics.
If, yeah.
If you can make them laugh, there's something
like
to that. Yeah. It's called.
Yeah.
And you also, which reminds me, so many funny stories that you tell. I've been watching some of the videos. One that came to mind, I can't remember the name of the musician who said, you know what the problem is with your music? And he said it was your voice. And you responded, well, you know what's wrong with yours? It's that you don't have a single serious word in there. And again, it made me listen to your lyrics.
That was a conversation with Harry Nilsson.
Yes.
You see, there's only one thing wrong. It's like after you had a couple of drinks, way too many, like after 2 o'clock drinking. he said, there's only one thing wrong with your voice. And I said, what's that, Harry? And he said, it stinks.
Oh, is that all? Is that the entirety of it?
I said, there's only one thing wrong with your songwriting. And he said, what's that? And I said, you can't write lyrics. it was all clearly. I mean, this is all good natured.
Sure, of course.
Fun. Particularly after 2 o'clock. anything goes. But he and I were pretty close, and always admired him. And he's another guy. Our children have pretty much grown up together.
Oh.
And. Into this sort of giant, I'm sure the same. In fact, I know it's true among comedians as well. Is that eventually it sort of branches out and it connects and it reconnects and it connects again and it becomes a giant family. It's mm-hmm. just a giant family of people who sort of love the same thing with this intense passion that really seals them all together, that it brings their hearts together. I feel that way about comedians. I don't feel, for instance, that there's a hell of a lot of difference. Oops, I don't know whether I was supposed
you
to say that.
You absolutely can say that, yep.
I don't know where there's a hell of a lot of difference between, right down at the core, at the soul level, between songwriters and comedians, because they're both kind of loners. We're both prone to depression at times. It's a lone eagle kind of a way to live. It's not really. The clown who stands up at the front of the room and makes everybody laugh and then goes back to the hotel and cries himself or herself to sleep,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in many ways, there are similarities between the psychological makeup of comedians and songwriters. And that's after knowing a few comedians.
Sure.
Including Albert Brooks and a lot of great guys that I've loved. I mean, I've had close friends, and to me, it's like, well, I understand what comedians sort of go through because writing a routine and writing jokes that are funny. And then that expectancy when you're standing on the stage and you tell that joke and you wait for that audience to laugh.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that moment is huge, right? Am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're not wrong at all. The expectation.
And I think that, you know, we, as songwriters, we're sort of, we write the song and we put it out there and we sort of wait to see what the audience is going to do, you know, and it's kind of like falling off a cliff, really.
Oh, no doubt.
Over and over.
And that elusive sense of what success means, you know? I think that's at every level.
Yeah, that's right. I think that it's, overall, it's fun. If you look back and you say, well, you know, I could have been a butcher, you know, overall, it's been kind of fun. But there are moments when the wear and tear, you know, they just it's like a rubber band that's been popped too many times, up and down and up and down and up and down, and there's a certain kind of emotional fatigue that sets in, and I've seen it in my fellow songwriters, and I've seen it in some of my comic friends as well, and you wonder. For instance, you wonder, well, how could, you know, someone so successful and so funny and so, you know, how could someone like that want to kill themselves,
right.
For instance, right?
Sure.
And it's because people don't, however much they want to understand, it's a really difficult thing to understand what we do.
And it's something that is impossible to convey. And you know, having lost, when we lost Robin Williams as a comic, for us it was like...
Yeah, who I was thinking of, to be honest with you, because I knew him. He was a good friend of mine and Harry's. He was very close with Harry, and I got to know him a little bit. I was so slammed when I just, you know, that was really hard for me to grasp. I never saw him when he wasn't joking around about something.
Right. And for comics, as you mentioned, you know, for us, it was like losing our general on the battlefield. It really was.
I bet. I can imagine that. Yeah. I can imagine. Oh, yeah. You know, what do we do now?
Yeah. I mean, if that wasn't, you know, it was like being leaderless. We were talking to Jimmy Webb, who is going to be at the Woodstock Opera House. You can go to woodstockoperahouse.com for the events. And that's going to be this Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. I don't know how many stories I want to step on that you might share with the audience, because you really have so much wonderful material online. I have a whole Google radio channel now devoted to Jimmy Webb, your music, like Red Sails and P.F. Sloan. And some great music that...
Oh, that's really fantastic. I didn't know that.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah,
but I'm gonna have to follow up on that.
Well, it's a subscription, so I subscribe to a Google service. So I'm hoping that you're getting some money off of that.
you know what though? You're so considerate and nice, because a lot of, you know, like hosts, and sometimes I think it's just because they don't have a clue, but sometimes I think it may be a little more Machiavellian when they start tipping off my stories ahead of the show, you know, like on the radio. Or sometimes they get up and they introduce me.
Oh, yeah.
And they do all my material and my introduction, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to do any more of your stories yet.
You son of a bitch, you know? I'd like to kill you right now, you know?
Oh, man. No, that's why I only wanted to do one, and I was misremembering it the whole way, so I'm so glad that you told it. Well, and this is, I think that I approach having guests on my show, to me, the same way that you have approached songwriting for yourself and for others, is that the goal is to make it, you know, to make whatever you want to put out there dazzle, you know, whether it's the performer that's going to sing for you. For me, it's my guest. My moment here isn't to look good. My moment is for everyone to know more about you and learn, you know, why they should come out and see you, because obviously they should.
Well, thank you so much, and I really appreciate you throwing your influence behind me for this one. And you know, look, it's, people ask me, they say, you know, because I'm not I'm not. It's like coming out of the closet. I think that old people should come out of the closet.
Yes.
And so if somebody asks me how old I am, I say 72.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how old I am. And people ask me. They say, "Well, why do you need to be?" You know, like usually it's like a hipster type.
Sure.
And it's like, why? You know, why do you? You know, you don't need to be working, do you? I mean, what do you need all this crap for? Like that.
Uh-huh.
And I look at these guys, you know, and I think, man, you know, you just don't get it at all, because this is life, man. This is living, breathing. This is flight. This is what I do that makes me tick.
That's
you
right.
know.
Yep.
And without this, I'm nothing. So, you know, if you want to take this away from me and put me in an old folks home, and then, you know, watch me die. Count the hours, you know, because it won't be long. You know, it doesn't just keep me going. It keeps me enthralled and inspired and moving on to the next project. I just did an all instrumental project where I play other people's music, Billy Joel, Warren Zevon.
Oh, wow.
Stevie Wonder, Brian Wilson, and I could go on and on, including Michael Brown, who wrote Pretty Ballerina and Walk Away Renee for the Left Bank, who I regard as a genius. And so, you know, they're people that I feel have made extraordinary contributions to composition in pop music since 1946, since the end of the war, because I feel that sometimes we don't give enough cred to some of these writers. The Great American Songbook gets a lot of credit,
right?
And you know, Yip Harburg, and yes, you're right. You know, Jimmy Van Heusen and Sammy Kahn and the whole wonderful potpourri of writers who wrote for Broadway and film, and yes, they were the god. They were sort of godlike.
Right.
But a lot of great music was written in the '60s and early '70s. So I'm sort of peeling those back to the basics of chords, melody, and structure, and just playing them in a very, very minimalist way, and it's kind of interesting to listen to. It's a little bit different to hear God Only Knows played just as a musical composition.
Right.
And so so I'm putting that out. I think that just came out. I know the single came out because it was Billy Joel's lullaby that he wrote for Alexa when she was a little girl.
Aw, that's lovely.
And I was going through the same thing. I was going through a divorce and trying to get used to the idea that things were going to be different between me and my 4-year-old daughter, who was precious and didn't really understand why mommy and daddy had to fight. And I would go to Madison Square Garden and hear Billy play and sing that song, and I'd sit there and cry like a baby. I mean, I'm the easiest target in the world, you know. I have never gotten over my how could I put it, over my sensitivity to music. It's always had a way of breaking me up.
Right.
And it still breaks me up. And I don't ever want to lose that part of my soul that feels that, you can call it pain if you want, but whatever it is, I don't want to lose it.
Well, we're glad that
and,
you...
And so the record, a slipcover, is kind of dedicated to those moments. I put Joni Mitchell's A Case of You on it because I can't get through that song without, like, a little tear, you know, or two. And if I really sit and listen to a song and if it has some emotional power to it, I'm going to feel it. I'm going to be the person in the room who's going to cry first. It's going to be me, you know.
Well, I hope that audiences feel it with you, and I encourage them to. By the way, we've been talking to Jimmy Webb, 4-time Grammy winner, the dreamer from Laverne, Oklahoma, who's going to be at the Woodstock.
Thank you, Patty.
Of course, at the Woodstock Opera House this Saturday at 8 p.m. Go to woodstockoperahouse.com. And I'm so glad you're coming back to town. We'd love to have you in studio someday if your schedule ever allows.
Listen, I just want to meet you now.
Well,
face to face and see if you're for real.
I'll see if I can make it out to the Opera House. We've been doing
okay.
We have some events coming up out there, so maybe they'll let me say a few words. And I won't ruin any of your intro, I promise. But
No. I mean, I'd love to see you. So that would just be fat. That would be the icing on the cake, sweetheart.
Oh, wonderful. Well, then I hope to see you on Saturday. I hope to see everybody then on Saturday. If
okay.
I'm going out there, we
thank
can
thank you so much.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful evening and enjoy the rest of your week, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So lovely. More after this on 720 WGN.